You see the challenge we have as African
because they're regulating, I would say.
We don't have career diplomats. By career diplomats, I mean people who went in school and learned, you know, took up studies in international relations and all that.
Mm.
We have political failures who are going to do, you know, diplomats.
Yes, guys, it is the Power Talks with Suna, Ronald, myself. This is a podcast that aims to bring conversations about digital and media business on a record where thought leaders guide and help us to understand the market needs, which will shape the industry for the very best at global standards. Myself and the team have created this show not only because we have history in professional digital marketing for brands, but we felt a call to action to share knowledge with industry players that this will be the right thing to provide solutions to aspiring entrepreneurs in the digital landscape. If today is a special day, guys, I don't know what to say about this day because I've always kept on saying that I have a special guest, but this one is much more special. I am joining Broadcast Media, another company, it's radio, and it's, I think, 3 months in. I'm trying to ponder to find ways on how I can execute and be a tick with the kind of the practice, the office that I'm given. And that's digital marketing as a digital officer for a certain brand that most of you know about. And here comes a gentleman that was also practicing in telecommunication. He guides me on a few things here and there on how to tweak and, you know, shape Twitter conversations. Because, yes, I was so good, I could tell you. But content and platforms are quite different. There are specific people who have like harnessed the talent and skill in these platforms. And if it's Twitter, I will tell you that it's kind of a cutthroat. It's something which is quite unique that not everyone like has knowledge about. So I was that kind of a person. The person who I ran to is called Matthias Semander. Someone that is known in the digital space, but like you're on Twitter, you're into the education sector and policy diplomacy. You're in those zones, you get to know about Matthias Semander, who he is. Helping many brands in state and private entities. He's the guy I wanted to bring today on the show. And you're going to learn so much from this podcast. I'm so pumped up for the questions that I have, first of all, to ask him. And it's going to be a great day for you guys. I hope you enjoy. Matthias, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sona, for having me.
Yeah. I think I've made a good introduction for you, right?
Absolutely. I can't add anything. Like, you've mentioned it all.
Yeah. So, when I was engaging you recently, I wanted, first of all, to have you early this year when we were trying to shoot for our first release.
Yes.
You're such a busy man. And to call you a man, you are a man. I don't say, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you're now a big man handling Makerere University.
Yes.
And there is so much that people don't know about you. And when I was thinking of what topic can I ask Matthias Semander, and it was digital diplomacy, and you've just asked me a question off camera. How did you know that I was doing digital diplomacy? And for starters, I want you to first of all explain to people what's digital diplomacy, and then we shall start off and get into your, you know.
Yeah. Thank you, Suna. Actually, talking about my followers and people who know me.
Yes.
I would say that we've come from far back then when I'd just joined the private sector in the same industry.
Yes.
But again, I was so much focusing on digital marketing.
Yes.
So I would say that right now my followers are not aware of my shift.
Yes.
And I think this podcast is giving me an opportunity to actually unveil to people officially that I am going to have digital diplomacy as my niche.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think digital diplomacy is something new in Africa, especially when you're looking at our markets and the way governments and institutions do business. It's something new that I would wish that they do get into. Just to explain it a little bit, digital diplomacy is just a way of using the internet, new media technologies to harness or to achieve some objectives in governance and administration. So it's all about that, because you're looking at digital and diplomacy. So we just add up the two words and then we have digital diplomacy. Yes. And others call it e-diplomacy. Others call it digi-diplomacy. So I think it's something new to someone who's out there. But I think at the end of this podcast, they're going to understand a little bit more about
How long has it taken you to have this new digital diplomacy thing going on?
If you look at my career, I started so much in digital marketing. But my academic career was so much in public policy because I am a development studies scholar. So After joining Makerere University, which is an academic institution, yes, I realized this is my time to now concentrate on what I wanted so much, being in advocacy, public policy. But now, how do we do this better as young generation?
Yes.
And I think maximizing the new digital spaces is what we can do to push.
So we can give it like a period of 5 to 7 years of experience?
Yeah, you can look, give it like 7 years.
Let's go back. Yes. Let's go back behind those years.
Yes.
You're into, first of all, you're very vocal on Twitter.
Yes.
I like your tweets. You're quite influential when it comes to maybe calling out a brand.
Yes.
Some things that I can I cannot do, you can. But the influence you've built is not something that one just wakes up in a year or two and have. How did you know that you would be this kind of person that you are today? How did you know that social media marketing would give you what you have right now? And how did it start about?
First of all, I actually had a passion for doing ICT. And when I applied to study at Makerere and they never gave it to me, and they gave me a new subject course, I had never heard about. Of course, I applied for it because you have a couple of choices. So I went for it. And I think being a liberal scholar, because these are liberal subjects, it gives you an idea on how you look at things. So I continued pursuing ICT as a subsidiary, practicing it and all that. And here comes the new media technology, social media. So when you looked at when I looked at them, I realized that there is really some good.
So you could say that you got your awareness about digital marketing and your skills when you are having this ICT degree, which is a background that maybe you want to be in the space of, you know, communications and ICT, right?
Yeah, like I said, I never got the chance to do that degree in ICT.
Yes, you didn't. Yes. What degree did you do?
I did a degree in development studies.
Ah. Yeah.
But I told you that I had passion for ICT.
You had the passion
for
ICT.
I kept, on the sidelines of my program.
Why are you having a passion for ICT? At home, are you like having gadgets at home? What was it?
Actually, I came. I grew up in a very remote district.
Take us back. Where is that? Bukomansimbi.
Yes, I grew up in Bukomansimbi. Even my schools, I went in rural schools. Usually when I give my thoughts on the platform, people don't know me think that maybe this guy went to one of these big traditional schools. But I even went to rural schools, studied in Karangara for 6 years. So, but, you know, I saw the gap. You could see the gap because you studied with kids from Kampala.
That's quite fascinating that you're seeing the gap in those schools, in those areas. It's not Kampala.
Yes.
You would say that, you know, he's exposed to the industry.
Because there is two computers at school and then you see the way kids from Kampala really interact with them and realize there is a problem with us. So I realized there was a gap in digital media.
And you are the person, you are the messiah in that school to see the problem.
Yes, so it gave me passion to really invest so much energy into that. And actually where I am, I think it's the background that has shaped me up to where I am today. So being vocal online and talking about issues using the new media technologies, it's just an amalgamation of all the things I've gone through as a person, like being through all these, you know, ugly social times and then being transformed.
Were you always like this when you were little?
Not really. Like I've told you that I didn't have a chance to even get exposed to technology.
Were you like in leadership roles? Because I think for one to have a stand and be able to voice certain issues that people are afraid.
Yes.
I would say one would say that Matthias is controversial.
Yes.
Or Matthias is not a people pleaser.
Yes.
He'll go by what he thinks is right.
Yes.
And that's an attribute I would say that it's a skill that is possessed by leaders, people in power, but who have had like an experience in that kind of vertical.
Yeah.
So, which positions were you holding?
Of course, I would leave out the secondary school prefect.
Please, you were a prefect,
Yes, I was prefect in my school, O level up to A level. Those were very many roles, but I think I was mainly transformed at university because at university I was a guild representative for my school for 2 years. Those are two terms. And I was also a guild minister. So being a guild minister at Makerere with the politics that is there, I think it gives a platform. And now coming from a marginalized background, you come into the politics where some of the people you compete with to go into these positions are like they have the money. So I think that breakthrough alone was major. So I did a lot of politics and activism at university. And I think that really exposed me now to being assertive and being aggressive and talking about issues.
We're talking about policies. We're talking about leadership.
Yes.
I meet you in a telecommunications company.
Yes.
I meet you at AfriCell.
Yes.
Did it deny you what you wanted to have prior to what you are now? Because it's a different shape of our industry. It's, you know, telecommunications, you're competing with MTN and you know what, so not.
Yes.
Were you the first person, first of all, at Airtel as a social media manager?
At AfriCell. At AfriCell, I was the first digital media manager they had.
Where you gave people problems.
Yes. And like I told you.
In this context of other competitors, not the people, your employers. Yes. Yes.
And I think my strategy was so aggressive because of what we've talked about. You know, coming from an area where you like, you know, a liberal scholar, and now you're doing digital marketing for a telecom company. Like, I came in aggressively. Like, you push digital marketing, you're marketing a brand, but aggressively.
Yes.
You go heads on with a brand.
Yes.
And at times,
we saw that a lot. I miss that.
I could find myself, at collision, like with brands. Then someone sends a text message to my inline supervisor, like, what are you guys doing on social media? Like, you are this, you're too low. You've attacked us here.
Yes.
So I think at a later stage, you will know that, or you will see that that one paved the way for my exit from the telecom company to join higher education, because I realized that I wasn't achieving my dream.
Yes.
There is a lot of, the aggressiveness that is there is a bit polite. You can't be so, you want to annoy, because here in public policy, we annoy. Digital diplomacy, we annoy, because you're going to talk about issues that affect people using the internet. You're going to be a bit political, because you're talking about, you're looking at governments using the internet, exploiting the internet.
Yes.
So I realized that I had to shift now to come to an area now that is both appreciating my scholarly background and now using the new media technologies.
What did AfriCell give you?
AfriCell gave me the contacts. They gave me the connections. And they also added, that value. Like, because at that particular stage, I had no employment experience. So meeting very many people in a telecom company, you know, traveling the entire country, you meet celebrities. It gave me the confidence that I can make it. And
we're now in the mainstream.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think AfriCell just opened my doors and really gave me the confidence to...
Your transition to Makerere University, because you've served at AfriCell for how long?
I served at AfriCell for 1 year.
Take us through your tunnel of your transition to Makerere University. How hard was it? Was it in any hard? Because at least you were familiar with the policy and diplomacy.
Yeah, it was hard because at Makerere, you're looking at one of the largest universities.
You're not going to attack UCC, so UCU or Ndeje?
No.
Yes.
Yeah. You're looking at one of the largest universities in Africa, but this university has been in place for 98 years.
Yes.
So they have grown their brand. They have not used social media to develop their brand. I mean, if you tell them that I am bringing social media to you as something magical, there is magic in this, they couldn't understand you. So coming to higher education to introduce the idea, to penetrate them and really them appreciate that I had to be around to work with them was very hard, because like I've told you, you're looking at a brand that has been there. They have been among the top five universities in Africa for over 70 years without social media.
Yes.
So you're coming and tell them, man, we have social media. It's a trend. We need to use digital to push the brand of this university. Telling them, look, Harvard is there. Look, University of Cape Town is there. They're like, man, we don't need this. But what helped me, talking about digital diplomacy, that by the time I joined Makerere University, Trump had just revolutionized the way government officials communicate online, because he came in as a Twitter president.
Yes.
I mean, he removed all the barriers, all the formalities of communication between the president and the public.
Yes.
So by the time I joined Makerere University, the vice chancellor was aware that there is Twitter, and the US president is tweeting his thoughts on Twitter, because he was the talk of the town by then.
And I think it's inspired him also to have an account, right?
Yeah. So
is he controlling that account, or it's you controlling that account?
No, he does control his accounts. What we do in digital diplomacy, you have the public figure there. What you do is you create the platforms for them and give them time to learn how to manage them. And after that time, they start running them. What we do is monitor. I may have logins to his account, but what I do is I monitor notifications, because he has a busy schedule. If an ambassador of a given country has tweeted about him and tagged him and doesn't respond, in digital diplomacy, that is a crisis.
Yes.
They expect you to respond.
Crisis, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's how far digital diplomacy is taking us, that people are now being offended by a non-response, delayed responses from a public official. If an ambassador of France tags the vice chancellor of Makerere in his Twitter account, it's my job to see that notification and send him the tweet and tell him you've been tagged here, and then he goes there and respond.
You're really doing amazingly well with Makerere University, with a whole franchise of group that is around you, the chancellor, the institutions, are they called institutions?
Yes.
The schools, they're called schools, the school of law, there is school, I don't know how many schools.
Yes,
I can testify, and you guys, you can go on Facebook or Twitter, that out of all universities, I'm not trying to downplay other universities, but it's only Makerere that has had, I don't know how many schools approved and verified, authentified on Twitter. Like, you guys are on your A game, and I applaud you for that. How you've managed to do that, it has been a space of, you know, I think 1 year to see you do that. And it's quite inspiring that I'm not thinking that even other countries around Africa are doing it. Yet I know that maybe there could be even bigger universities that are not reaching a certain level. And you're the kind of person that would that they would approach, but like, I want to get verified. When again, I want to get like Facebook support. And we've had like private, you know, conversations on the involvement in the elections towards 2021.
Yes.
But before I get into that, before you tell us about your involvement in the elections and the things that you aim to do for the country, why do you think it's so important for brands, let's say institutions, to be that, you know, aggressive on social media? Because you would say that the institution that is not having, like, you know, big recognition may not necessarily want to use social media. You understand? Why do you think they need to take up their A game and do things the way how Makerere University does them?
Yeah. Are you limiting this to academic institutions?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Of course, for academic institutions, the social media is very important in a sense that, one, their clients, if you look at universities now, their clients are millennials. These are young people. Of course, the university has people are doing PhDs and all that, but those are like 1% or 2% in African universities, because African universities don't have very many PhD scholars.
Yes.
So, but the biggest number of clients they have are young people. These are, you know, kids, you know, aged between 18 to 25. So they're always on their smartphones. So right now at Makerere, around 95% of the undergraduate students have smartphones. So there is no way you're going to communicate to them without using the platforms where they are.
But they have emails and, you know, numbers to these, you know, these students.
Yeah, I mean, emails are old school. Me and you know that this is an apps generation. Everything they talk about, an app.
Yeah.
I mean, download the Jumia app. Download the, I don't want to, you know, market some of these brands here, but it's an app generation. So, even institutions are now going away from emails. You remember that nowadays, if you're signing up on a service today online, that they are giving an option of sign up with Twitter, sign up with Facebook. Yet, primarily, it used to be emails.
Yes.
So, social media is very important for communication purposes and administration, because you're communicating to your clients. And then, secondly, research and partners. You know, most of these partners globally, most of these universities are sustained by funding from abroad and different partners across the globe. So when you're researching on a project, these partners expect you to tweet, to share about the findings.
I've seen a lot that a lot from that from Makerere University's institution that handles COVID research with other global partners.
Yes. So all those partners expect you to tweet about them, to share news instantly about, and Twitter is a good, because they also, when it's, they see these tweets, they crop out them, they pick the links, and then they share them with home governments and say, wow, we are funding Makerere University on this project, and they have just tweeted this research finding.
I'm glad that you talked about Twitter as an example here. Does it, do we have to say, okay, if at all we are into digital diplomacy, if at all like we are an institute like Makerere University, should we be also on all these other platforms, let's say Snapchat, TikTok?
Yes.
Do we should we be there?
You have to be there. You have to sign up on a platform that has come. You may not be active, because signing up is different from being active on a platform. You can be there to reserve your identity there, and you may choose not to be active at that particular time until when because you don't know what the future of that particular platform.
Mm.
I'll give you an example of Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when Instagram came up before Facebook bought it, it was like people took it lightly.
Mm.
So brands signed up and they were not active then. So when this entire platform became so big, like very many millennials are there, brands are signing up. For example, what would the university be doing on Twitter? I mean, on Instagram, for real. Because universities circulate information, research, that's the main, and information, that's and communication, that's the main use of their social media. So, but Instagram is about pictures. But their clients are there. You have over, 1 million monthly active users in Uganda on Instagram. So basically, you need to exploit the platform and be there. Others that have just come, you can sign up. If the future of the app is promising,
then you start
being active. Content. Yeah.
Interesting, interesting. That's good information because I thought that when you are, because from my digital marketing perspective, I didn't ever concentrate on creating an account, and I know between me and you that there is a chance of you getting a username, if at all, like you've delayed to access it.
Yes.
But then having, the quick, mindset, the quick thought of let me create my account there before it's being taken up. That's something which is cool.
Mm.
Is verification, Matthew, is important? You kind of celebrate so much about verification on Twitter.
Yes.
And people get frustrated.
Yes.
We've been frustrated about it on Facebook.
Yes.
It's like as if you're the verification god. And we in the content creators, we're like, why is he paying so much attention to verification? Yes, we know that blue badge and the ambiguity that it brings to a brand.
Yeah.
How important is it to you? And why do you think that everyone should be like running for it? Or even those ones that you don't advise to run for it? Please explain for us.
Yeah, actually, when you look for most definitions of verification on the internet, they use the word coveted. Coveted means the most yearned for thing.
Mm.
So the blue badge is always outstanding on a platform, on an account where it is. Of course, primarily people thought it was an endorsement from these companies.
Mm.
It is an endorsement from Twitter. It's an endorsement from Facebook that this guy is legit.
Mm.
So that one was rebutted by Twitter actually withdrawing the public form because people misunderstood.
Mm.
But when you look at the number of people online and the identities, because there can be so many Sooners, on Facebook, but there is that one outstanding Sooner.
That's great.
We need to verify Sooner and give him a blue badge so that when he posts, people can look at his page and say, this is authentic.
Mm.
And when you're likely to be impersonated, it's very, very important that you get verified. Because,
well, you are verified, but Facebook refused to verify me. And also talk about the eligibility of getting verified, please.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, the eligibility, it depends on every company has its own eligibility procedure. Because Facebook will tell you, as long as you have a huge presence on Facebook, like, you're likely to be impersonated, because Facebook has over 2.5 billion monthly active users globally.
Mm.
So it means that if a celebrity is in Uganda alone, he's likely, like if he's a middle-level celebrity, he's likely to be followed by 500,000 people.
Mm.
That person is likely to be impersonated. So we swing in and help them, verify them, make their account. So for Twitter, of course, they also have their own methodology.
Mm.
But now that we're talking about digital diplomacy, across the board, every platform now is considering verifying or giving a voice, an authenticated voice, to government officials,
and that's where I was going
people
to,
in politics.
You're doing so much on behalf of government.
Yes.
I don't know where the government is noticing. They should give you a Battle Heroes Day. But how do you get involved with government?
Mm.
It's indirectly, yes, I know, but you may explain to my audience because they may not know the works you're doing. And also your role with these platforms, Facebook and Twitter.
Yes. Of course, with Facebook, which also owns Instagram and WhatsApp, and then Twitter, I am a liaison. In Uganda.
Mm.
Yeah, I got a chance and someone introduced me to these companies and I now do work with them as a liaison. This is not a paid for job, but being their eye in a country to watch over content and advise them on what is authentic, what's not authentic. I think for me, I take pride in that because, like you've seen my story, my background, this is where I want to be.
Mm.
So I'm not prepared to do that. But with government, I think like it's very important that African governments get, you know, a bigger voice on the internet. And for me, if you look at the way the US government does its digital diplomacy, it's very amazing.
Mm.
Because you look at, you know, the former president of the 44th president, who is Barack Obama, all his administration accounts are being archived right now under the National Archives, you know, administration agents.
Mm.
So these guys archive the content. How do they archive it? There was a Twitter account for POTUS.
Mm.
Now it's changed to POTUS 44.
Mm.
And all of the tweets he sent during his time in office, the content is there. So if you want to get any information from a particular agency in USA, like they have steady social media presence, verified accounts. So for me, that one pushes me hard. And I'm like, I think our government needs to be there.
Mm.
Our politicians, our leaders. So being from a neutral perspective, because I don't work with mainstream government, in academia, we always supposed to be neutral. Of course, people tell you that Makerere is a public university, but even the government knows that they leave that autonomous, you know, with universities. They allow them to do their things.
Mm.
So for me, coming from that neutral perspective and now working with these social network companies, it gives me a chance to point out which, you know, politicians we have in the country that need an authenticated voice.
Mm.
You verify their accounts. You don't have to mind about their political party affiliations.
Yes.
Yeah. But you do it for the good of your government, for the good of your country. So,
interesting. You are now at the helm, I could say. Now that you are in contact with the Facebook and Twitter, you name it. The young man who is listening to such a session with you talking about all this, how do I get there, first of all?
Yeah.
How do I get in touch with Facebook? How do I understand the policies that govern social media? Share with them, how did you get here? What do I have to do to be like Matthias Semander?
Yeah, I think honesty is one of the things and professionalism. Because if a certain company like Facebook is going to trust you to point out on which minister gets a blue badge or which government organization is going to be verified on a social media platform, to some young people who are not honest and unprofessional, they would probably give in, you know, brands that are not really supposed to. So I think honesty is key. When I first started working with Facebook, Sub-Saharan Africa, and of course someone realized that I was really doing a good job for them and then said, as someone on Twitter, that I think you need to get in touch with this guy and we are going to go to the elections and we shall discuss that as well. And so you need to work with this guy. So I think honest and being so strict about your goals, where you want to be, is very important. So because these companies, you know, love trust. If they can trust you that you can do some good work with them, it's very important.
Do I have to have like a position like at Makerere University?
Yeah, of course, working with a government institution is key because they consider governments have, you know, the most strict kind of, you know, recruitment process for staff.
Mm.
And I think it's a very easy way to identify someone who works with the government than someone who works with some organization there because of the data is can easily be available. If I do something creepy, you know, Facebook can easily contact the university and they tell them, oh, working with someone from here, this is what they did. So I think working with government gives you an edge or government institutions. Now in academia, it's even very important because academic institutions are highly respected across the globe.
And does this also, do you teleport this knowledge to other institutions that are not Makerere University?
Yeah, like you've seen that I'm aggressively now investing in digital diplomacy. I want to go out now and support other institutions, other universities, other government organizations. Right now, you know that I am helping very many government institutions to execute. So I am now going, you know, wholesale. You mean
I'm going to leave down your email if at all you permit me,
it's
so that they can use to contact you guys. You'll find it below the description and you'll contact him. But I want you to get into the active work that you're going to enroll yourself into the elections. But on the point of elections that have been overseen, especially the very trendy ones, which are the USA elections, I've seen what the policy desk has been doing with Trump's tweets. Twitter, Facebook, any other platform that I may not be familiar with, they tend to censor content they may presume.
Yes.
Because I think it's an assumption that it's not aligned with their policies that they have. You understand?
Yes.
And when you look at Trump's tweets, when he says, you know what? They cheated me or I won.
Yes.
So they flag that.
Yes.
Is that your role as a person who will be taking on digital diplomacy? And if at all it's not that, explain to me, why does it happen? And is Uganda reaching that level?
Actually, this is now the gist of digital diplomacy.
Mm.
Because of digital diplomacy, we are looking at policies and privacy.
Mm.
You know that the way Facebook functions in Europe and Google is different from the way it functions in Africa. Because Europe has their own privacy policies and concerns they have raised over time, regulating these tech giants. So it's about digital diplomacy and the way these guys are seeing these platforms. So when you talk about elections, Facebook and Twitter, they are involved and they're interested because they even have special desks that handle government. Mm. There is a government desk at Twitter, there is a government desk at Facebook. So now the time for elections, you're looking at very many young people on the internet today, you know, in Uganda, on social media. So if there is an election and Facebook does not have policies that are going to help governments or electoral, you know, management agencies to really cut out very transparent, you know, legal processes.
Don't you think they're partisan somehow?
They're not partisan, because when they come in, they are just limiting their operations within their platforms. They have a policy and they're telling you that before an electoral commission organization has announced results, you're not supposed to do this. So this cuts across. If you do it from the other side, I mean, they'll flag your tweet. If Biden did it, they would flag his tweets.
Do you think so? I don't think so.
If Biden announced himself before, they would flag his tweets.
Mm.
So I think they're not being biased. And for Africa, it's very important for us because misinformation affects the African continent so much as compared to the developed countries.
Mm.
Why? If you look at the level of education between the two areas, the North and the South,
yes,
the people in the North are highly educated.
Mm.
Of course, they have their people are average, but the gap here, it's too much.
Yeah.
So Facebook and Twitter are supposed to actually be much involved in, because the platforms here, if they're not really
regulated
and all that, misinformation can cause a lot of havoc, because here people do not take that time to dissect the information that is usually circulated.
Would you tell Facebook that Museveni has tweeted something that is against their policies and they flag it?
No, I mean, they monitor the content. Mm. They monitor the content. No one raises the flags.
Mm.
For example, Twitter has a dedicated team that monitors accounts of presidents. And I don't know why people don't think that this is done.
Mm.
You have not more than 300 presidents in the world.
Mm.
And if 200 of them are on Twitter, I mean, there's no magic. These guys have teams that monitor tweets from world leaders.
I thought they are so distant to our reality here. I thought they are not like in connection with our teams here locally.
Because
they are interested in USA, those big nations and stuff.
Facebook has what they call the Europe, Middle East, and Africa desk.
Mm.
Twitter has the Sub-Saharan Public Policy desk.
Mm.
So it shows you their interest. Because you can't have a desk to handle Sub-Saharan Africa when you're not interested in Sub-Saharan Africa. What happens in Sub-Saharan Africa? And Sub-Saharan Africa is majorly, you know, West Africa, East Africa here.
Mm.
So these countries. So they are interested. That's why they have desks and support people. Recently, there is the head of government, politics and advocacy, Facebook, Fatou. She was in Uganda.
Yeah, Fatou.
Yeah, she was in Uganda. And I think she met some colleagues from government agencies and briefed them about their policies and all that.
Mm.
So the reason why they are coming in Africa is they want to show that they are actually here.
Yes.
And they are here to help us, to support us, and also to assert themselves as tech giants.
Mm.
Because Africa is the next, you know, big thing.
Yeah.
So, like I've said, they really care about us because they have created platforms, and so no one really needs to report like an abusive tweet from the president of Uganda, because there are people that side that monitor these accounts, and they know that if something is done from a president's account that is against the policies, they'll flag the account. But of course, the presidents have exemptions. They can't suspend a president of Twitter and all that.
having you, thank you for that information, having you as a person now who is on ground, on behalf of Twitter, what are some of the things that you would let our audience know, the things that you're trying to do with the elections that are coming in 2021?
Yes, with elections, recently colleagues from Twitter sent me an email and they told me that we need to get in touch with the Electoral Commission in Uganda and expose them to our tools. Yes. They're called reporting tools. Yeah. Reporting tools usually help Electoral Commission to maybe use them to report any misinformation towards elections. And it's not the Electoral Commission that decides what is pulled down. Mm. They just use the platforms or the tools to report.
Mm.
And then very objective teams at Twitter are usually there to see, to look at the information and verify it and see whether this is really misleading.
Mm.
Yeah, or it really goes against their policies and they act up accordingly. So there is going to be training. Staff at the Electoral Commission who are in charge of communications are going to be trained about how to use these tools during elections. And when we had one of our informal discussions on SAP, you talked about having a special emoji for Uganda elections.
Mm.
I think on the voting day, Uganda should also have a special emoji on Twitter.
Yes.
If there is an hashtag, we should have a special emoji.
Yeah, shared interest from the platform that it does to other countries.
Yes.
And on that note, I've really understood digital diplomacy. I hope our audience is listening in and they understand it. But does this also affect all other verticals? Let's say entertainment, lifestyle, and e-commerce.
Yes.
Is there any connection with digital diplomacy and these verticals?
Yeah, there is. Because like I've told you, digital diplomacy is about governments, interagencies, you know, of governments and countries on how they export new media technologies today. So it somehow affects them because if you look at trade today is, trade of course is a geopolitical issue. I mean, you know, countries are trading between each other and all that. So how a tweet from, you know, the NBA officials in USA was going to affect their trade deals with China. You know how that was going to happen.
Yes.
I mean, this guy, the head of NBA, came up and tweeted something about whatever China was doing in Hong Kong. And China told them, I mean, this is out of control. I mean, we are going to stop people in China from watching NBA. And that is affecting taxes that USA gets from, you know, NBA. So It is. There is no difference, and that's why African governments need to know its importance. Digital diplomacy, it can affect entertainment, it can affect trade, because today people take, it was just a tweet, and when Chinese government saw it, they said, we are going to stop, you know, all China televisions from broadcasting NBA League, because it was a tweet. So it they tell you that even if it is Twitter, you have to tweet responsibly, because there can be a catastrophe out of, you know, a tweet from a minister in a government. Or because look at the elections in the US, you understand that we have a president-elect Biden, and now Trump is not conceding, but US media is asserting Biden is win by saying that very many global leaders have congratulated him. From where? From Twitter.
Yes.
Guys just went on Twitter and said congratulations Biden.
Yes.
So that shows you the importance, I mean, how digital diplomacy plays in.
Mm.
Because it's now a thing that a president is going to tweet, and previously it used to be a phone call. But there's no way you could prove that so-and-so has called Biden. I mean, you can't prove that. So, but now there is Twitter, there is Facebook, as long as they post about it.
Mm.
Yeah.
When we are talking about digital diplomacy,
yes,
diplomacy as it is in description,
yes,
it's its practice, its legitimate practice in Africa, especially Uganda, kind of escapes us a little bit. Somehow the fact that we have bodies that are managing and regulating these social media platforms. In Uganda, we've seen new laws and policies that are kind of like against the diplomatic, you know, principle of utilizing these social media communication platforms. And what's your take on, first of all, the social media tax?
Yes.
And what's your take on the tax that was imposed? I think it's a fee that was imposed on platforms that are publishing a news content that is commercial.
Yes. Of course, it is some of these issues, I would say, frankly, they are political. Yeah. Mm. Because governments rarely take decisions that are not politically informed.
Yes.
Yeah, however much someone will tell you that this is about generating revenues, blah, blah, but most of the decisions taken.
Do you think it's USA. Diplomatic?
It's not. And you see the challenge we have as African
countries. Because they're regulating, I would say.
We don't have career diplomats. By career diplomats, I mean people who went in school and learned, you know, took up studies in international relations and all that.
Mm.
We have political failures who are going to do, you know, diplomas. That's why, rarely, I don't think we have more than 5 embassies that are on Twitter, on Facebook. But you don't have career diplomats, people who are grounded in diplomacy. I want to tell you that I'm doing digital diplomacy, but I have an ambition of doing a master's in international relations because I have to be practically involved and even intellectually fit. That when I talk about diplomacy, I am also academically informed.
Guys, I hope you've noticed that one. Matthias has just discredited our government, but let's go on.
So when you talk about these social media taxes, I understand government is saying they want to get taxes from
yes,
there. But there is, you know, a small part of revenue that we are getting from there.
Mm.
So I think it's just trying to limit usage and all that of the platforms and censure a little bit. China does it aggressively. So you could give probably Uganda credit when you compare it to China.
Yes.
But usually me, I don't want to compare my country to a one-party state like China, because China, they will tell you they have their domestic platforms.
OTT, Matthias. Yeah. OTT. And so, what are you doing about government removing that bogus tax?
Actually, for us as people who are in digital, me, I'm an advocate of digital diplomacy and I want to flourish.
Yes.
But of course, it has hit, you know, snags in Uganda, for example, with the introduction of OTT, but that is at policy level. And if I don't have, a position in the government, I can only stop at using my platforms to say this is, to point it out that this is bad. But I think at the end of the day, that doesn't stop us from achieving digital diplomacy. Like I've said, this is about governments and people now using new media technologies. So even internally here, we must achieve a better digital diplomacy strategy. And whether there is OTT or not.
If you are given position at UCC or government or ICT, you name it, a position that you, of course, excel and blossom in your attributes that you have, you have attained, what would you do? What would you change? Please take this for a campaign. What would you change? In your first 100 days.
Of course, my first 100 days being passionate about this industry where I am, I would look at how governments are using new media technologies.
Mm.
Yeah. And what is our vision as far as being digitally independent as a country or as a region? Because with social media, you need numbers.
How independent? You don't just,
what I mean is, how can we have our own platforms?
Mm.
Because I've seen people naively on social media saying that, we don't have even a social media network here in Uganda. I mean, this is about numbers. Mm. If you look at all the social media networks from the countries where they come from, these countries already have numbers.
Mm.
So you're not going to create your own WhatsApp version in Uganda and use it.
Mm.
Because if WhatsApp only has less than 10 million users in Uganda, it means if you create your own version of WhatsApp in Uganda, you'll have like 2 million people. What are you achieving? So I think we need to be, I would focus at advocating for digital independence, but continent-wise, as a region or as a block, so that, because if you have 1.4 billion people, that's the population in Africa, total population in Africa, and you have your own social media platform as a continent and you push it aggressively, I mean, it would be very interesting. I mean,
so you think there is still an opportunity gap that we can actually make our own indigenous platforms?
There is an opportunity. How does that come about? I'll show you. I'll give you an example of TikTok. Mm. You know, TikTok has just opened up to the rest of the world in 2017.
By China, yes.
Mm. Because it was created in China and it spent some time in China and it got 500 million monthly active users in China alone because China is a big country. By the time it opened up to the world recently in 2017, you see, it's now on the spiral. So if a new platform, because I would say TikTok on the world market has just come up and it is aggressive. So it means we still have a chance to create our own platforms and they blossom. But there is all that, you know, goodwill from from our leaders.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting. Guys, that's Matthias for you. I've been soaked with information about digital diplomacy. If at all you have any other questions, you can just hashtag Power Talks Podcast on Twitter. He's at Matthias Semander, is that correct?
Yes, across the...
He will get a receipt. At least maybe he can take on the discussion and can respond to your questions. But to me, from me, I'm so glad that you have been tuning in. I'm so happy that you have been available to keep on subscribing and, listening to other more podcasts on this channel. Please, can you give me your final conclusion, your final remarks on this podcast before you leave?
Yes, before I leave, I would want to formally actually tell my people, my followers, Ugandans that have now, you know, wholesale joined the digital diplomacy agenda, and I want to push it, and I'm very sure that we are going to be successful.
Yeah.
I want to see as many young people like on board. Yeah, and people should feel free to usually get in touch with me across all social
and networks. And that's at Matthias Semander.
Yes.
The email I'm going to share it.
Yes, Matthias
Semander. Do we have sessions with you? Like, can we have like a training session with you? If I want a training session, maybe let me say an institution, or I'm just an individual wanting to get equipped with the digital skills.
Yes. People can have, can invite me for training sessions and I can train them.
All right.
Yeah. Even these, I think I can use this platform to really inform government agencies. I know there are very many government agencies that don't know how to go about these things. So we can extend support to them in the areas of doctor.
We've had it from here, guys. Yes. Contact Matthias Semander.
Yeah.
He's your digital messiah in digital policy and digital diplomacy. Otherwise, thank you for tuning in and cheers.